Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guests today have been involved in composing and preparing music for a string of shows that have defined television history over the past 30 years. Composer Dan Folliard's work in broadcast television began at Paramount and included work on Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, and Bosom Buddies, to name a few. But the Oklahoma native is best known for his work as the lead composer on Home Improvement and Roseanne. Other series among the 50-plus he's worked on have included Seventh Heaven, The Secret Life of the American Teenager, and St. George. His work has been honored with Emmy nominations, and he's garnered 33 ASCAP Film and Television Awards, and he's currently serving as his third term on ASCAP's Board of Directors. Cheryl Folliard, his wife, has worked in another side of the film music business as a music supervisor, first at Paramount, then as a vice president at Disney. She's overseen music production for shows ranging from MacGyver and Star Trek The Next Generation to Lost, Desperate Housewives, and Grey's Anatomy. While at Disney, she also supervised a series of musical television remakes of classic shows like Annie, Cinderella, and The Music Man. The two are guests of the University of Tulsa's Film Studies program and will be speaking about their film scoring experiences to students and to the public this evening at 6 o'clock at the Lorton Performance Center's Meinig Hall. Dan and Cheryl Folliard are my guests today on Studio Tulsa. Dan and Cheryl, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's great to be here.
Dan and Cheryl worked in Hollywood on a number of television projects, film projects over the years. Dan, you're an Oklahoma native, and how did you end up in L.A. doing scores?
Well, I grew up in Oklahoma City, and I always loved music. I played in bands in high school. My mother gave us a name for the first one, the Scholars, but my friends thought that was not edgy enough. We became the Knight Riders, but... I became very involved with music, you know, during high school. And then I went to school back in Massachusetts at Amherst College. I was a political science major. In fact, my dad was a trial lawyer and still is here in Oklahoma. And we're here at the wonderful Mayo Hotel. It's great to be back because I remember my dad brought me here to meet some chief justices many years ago, and it's great to be back at the Mayo. But at any rate, while I was in Massachusetts studying to be perhaps following in his footsteps, I went to see a concert by Carole King and James Taylor, and it so inspired me my freshman year that I was playing on the baseball team. I quit the baseball team. I changed my major from poli sci to music, and I decided at that point that music was what I was going to be doing the rest of my life. I was fortunate. My dad was good friends with G.D. Spradlin, who was a very famous actor during the time. He was in law school with G.D. G.D. had just done The Godfather Part II and One-on-One and North Dallas 40, all these movies, always played an authoritarian figure. And G.D. said, "Jim, I hear your son's out there writing music in college." And my dad said, "Yeah, G.D., he is." He said, "Well, listen, I'd like to hear some of that. I'm doing a movie back here in Oklahoma called The Only Way Home, and I'm looking for someone to do the music." So during my sophomore year, leading into my junior year, G.D. heard some of my music, and we had written some songs, a fellow named Tom Shaparo and I. Tom's gone on to be a Hall of Fame songwriter in Nashville. But Tom and I had written some songs, and great composer in Oklahoma City, Yuki Hart. He decided to have Yuki and Tom and I write the music for his movie, The Only Way Home. And so then I was hooked. After I'd done that, headed out to L.A., and I've never looked back. So, but it was actually started by an Oklahoman, G.D. Spradlin, giving me an opportunity with that movie.
That's amazing. That's really great. Well, you know, one of the things you've done over the years is that songwriting skill has sort of helped you in your work because you've composed a number of theme songs for television shows. I would think, you know, next to writing a Christmas song, that's probably one of the most lucrative things a composer for film or television can do is write that theme song that gets played all the time.
Well, it's certainly been something that has, you know, been nice, you know, with a couple of kids and they had to go to college and everything, you know. That theme songs are certainly very important and have been very important in my life. But the advice I give anyone, it didn't have anything really to do with the money. You got to have it in your heart that you got to write music. And that was always the case with me. I never really worried about, you know, hey, am I going to be able to make a living at it? It's just, I really love to do it. And fortunately, the first few shows I didn't do the theme song. Mm-hmm. My first few shows, Happy Days in Laverne and Shirley, you may know. And my first show, Angie, Charlie Fox wrote the theme song, he and Norman Gimbel. In fact, after I started doing Angie, my first show, everyone said, God, I love that song. I'm hearing it on the radio all the time, Different Worlds by Maureen McGovern. And I said, I did not write that song. I didn't write that song. Charlie Fox wrote that song. So finally, after about 6 months, I just started saying, thank you very much. But yeah, I've been fortunate. Certainly the shows I've done with Matt Williams and David McFadden, Home Improvement and Roseanne, those are probably the two theme songs that people, you know, have probably heard the most, and they're still playing Roseanne quite a bit. But, you know, what you're trying to do with that theme is you're trying to get the essence of whatever character you're talking about. And I saw Roseanne, and here was this woman no one ever heard of, and Matt brought me in, my partner then, Howard Pearl, and he said, here is this kind of raucous kind of woman, and she's done the stand-up comedy, and she wants to do a TV series, and we're going to call it Roseanne, and guys, go out and do a theme song. I came back, played it for Matt. He said, that is absolutely the worst theme song I've ever heard in my life. It has nothing to do with this character. And it was kind of one of those moments you feel your life passing in front of you. And I said, okay, give us one more shot. And so I wore my most beat-up T-shirt. I always dress up, but let's say I had a beat-up T-shirt. I didn't shave for about a week. And I went into the Sound City. They made a whole documentary about this rocked-out studio where Dylan and the band and all these different groups, Nirvana, used to record. That's where we recorded this thing. I started strumming it, and Matt goes, all right, guys, you got it this time. That is it, you know. The theme song there.
Well, let me bring Cheryl in the conversation, sure. Because after you did your first film for J.D. Spradling, I guess you went back and actually learn the craft.
I had to learn the craft, exactly.
Yeah, and that's where you met Cheryl. And now, Cheryl, you've taken a different path. You're a music supervisor. Now, people see that in credits, but they really don't know what exactly it is. What does a music supervisor do exactly?
It is one of those titles that can be so varied, and it's not surprising that there would be confusion over what that person does, because sometimes it's putting together a soundtrack album. Sometimes it's placing the songs within a film or a television show and making sure everything is licensed correctly. In my case, it can be that, but it's mostly, in my case, handling the actors on set, coordinating with the composers and the producers, and starting with the script, seeing what the script needs musically, and then following through on all those things that it needs.
So you see a script of, a television episode, mm-hmm. and the director says, I think we're going to need music here and
exactly.
here and here, and then you go relay that to the music staff to actually...
Exactly, who actually does it, and make sure that they know their deadlines and know, obviously, our budget. Always in television, our budget. But I'm currently working on Austin and Ally, which is a mm-hmm. children's television show on Disney Channel. Both of our actors sing. There's songs that are written specifically for them for the show, and then handling that with the choreographers who are handling all the production of the dance numbers. And
Till Rich Bell last night, what happened?
Oh, they won the Kids' Choice Award Best Series, and our Best Actor, Ross Lynch, and Best Actress, Laura Morano. So we were excited. We're riding high. It's our fourth season, and... or finale season, so we're having a good time with that.
Yeah. Now, for years you did this for Disney,
yes.
and you worked on a lot of great shows like Lost and something like Grey's Anatomy, where not only do you have the music, that was a program that was also like breaking hits for a lot
yes.
of singer-songwriters, because that was sort of a part of it. Now, would you go out and find the music, or was that sort of something the creators of the show would find the music and say, make it work, or what exactly? How did that work?
At that time, I was vice president of television music for Disney, and we hired a music supervisor named Alex Patsavas, and she went out and found these songs. But part of it was even a little bit because of our budgetary concerns. We had, in general, budget about four songs per episode, but what they really wanted was more like 8 or 10. And so
you had to get unknowns.
She went out and found breaking groups and pitched them to Shonda Rhimes, the creator of the show, and they would go through these things. And so we ended up with a lot of breaking material. It was fantastic.
And during the early days of that show, I mean, there were hits coming out of that show.
Yes, yes. Once it got known for that, too, the record labels would specifically pitch bands that they felt strongly were going to break. Mm-hmm. But everything was always perfectly organized, in that case, by Alex, and then pitched to Shonda, and she had a great sense of music and everything that was going to work. And also set up scenes specifically for the songs. Once she found songs that she really wanted to use, and she's the writer, she can, you know, write to it. Yeah. Which makes them pop even more. So
yeah, and that's a pretty rare, I think, rare thing is in television to actually go out and get music, the already existing music, and sort of licensing it.
Yes,
isn't it?
Yes, that show was cutting edge with that. Also, before that, there was Felicity was doing it, mm-hmm. But I mean, versus Lost, who didn't really license too much music, but their big thing was scoring every episode with a large orchestra, which was also very unusual at that time. I think it's happening more now. And Alias before that, also by J.J. Abrams. So it was fun working with those creators when they have visions and are able to use music so fully into their concept of their show. Then
Rich,
it all comes together.
I got to jump in here. She had a lot to do with the fact that sound had a large orchestra, because I guarantee you, at that time it was very, very difficult. And she had a lot to do with it.
Let me ask you about, because one of the things that you guys got started in your career, and you also watched this huge exodus of jobs associated with scoring and recording music in Hollywood and in films and television. All this stuff started being outsourced. It went to, you know, Canada, went all over the place. What was that like to live through that as a composer? Did you just follow where the work went, or what exactly? Or did you stay in L.A.?
I've always stayed in L.A., and I, you know, I say it with confidence that every great, you know, opportunity I had in my life was realized, and the vision was realized because of the great musicians in Los Angeles. So when things started moving to different regions, I mean, it was very disappointing for me. And there were several reasons for that. One of the reasons was we started seeing less orchestra recording because the technology allowed us to be able to use synthesizers at times when we, you know, were using full string sections before.
And was it sort of an infatuation with the fact that, hey, I can replace this string section with a synthesizer, save money, and it's sort of new and novel?
Well, yeah.
I think the first exodus was to Canada. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was at working, before I was at Disney, I was at Paramount.
You started out like full orchestras in
the
big studios.
35-piece orchestra every week for MacGyver. And then MacGyver was one of the first ones. It was produced always in L.A., and we recorded it in L.A., and then they started producing it in
Vancouver.
Yeah. And then they moved the scoring up to Vancouver. We were still copying, doing the music copying in Los Angeles and sending it up. So that was kind of the turning point. So that was about 1990. And late 80s, moving into the 90s. And by the 90s, that's when I came over to Disney, and a lot of it, television scoring specifically, was now becoming home studios and everybody going for that sort of sound. They weren't necessarily going for an orchestral sound with the synth. They were using more synth sounds as synth sounds. And and then they started getting better samples, and that's when it started becoming more orchestral, but still on synth. And it's really kind of, Alias was one of the first ones that kind of brought back, that was also when I was
at Disney. So it's coming full circle.
Yeah,
now.
It's coming, and now it's definitely, people can recognize the sonic difference between a live orchestra and
And there's two different issues, too. It was one that the musician jobs were going to markets with better labor rates.
And the dollar was so strong.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of it was the foreign exchange issues that now has kind of gone down.
And, of course, there was just an announcement that the new Star Wars films are going to be recorded with L.A. musicians in L.A., which is kind of interesting. I had a musician friend said, well, that was the film that sort of started the move away from L.A.
right.
with the London Symphony Orchestra years
right.
and years ago.
That's right. That's good news.
And Dan, for you, you've been doing television series, and a lot of them sitcoms and then others, some family dramas. I would think that, especially in the sitcoms, the budget is incredibly tight. And what is your work like week to week when you're working a weekly sitcom as far as composing music? What sort of things are you doing once you've done the theme and sort of the music associated with the theme that you'll hear from week to week?
Well, let's talk about the last show that I did that was on for a long period of time, The Secret Life of the American Teenager. That show was on ABC Family. And I would record every episode with my core group at Capitol Studios. So it was right there in Hollywood at Capitol with these guys. And, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. So once the theme is done, there...
Which you had Molly Ringwald sing on.
Molly Ringwald.
Yeah, uh-huh.
That was amazing, getting her to come in the studio. I mean,
That was probably one of her first big profile singing things at that point.
Yeah.
Because now she's got albums out. And
yeah,
stuff.
Well, her dad was a very famous jazz musician, yeah. I found out. Mm-hmm. But once the theme was done, every episode had its own unique needs. And that's the thing that I think that's the thing that really, you know, makes our craft a craft is – sometimes you're not even aware of this music going on, but it's there to heighten the action or make the funnier scenes more comical, make the drama more intense, or make the horror, you know, scarier. And so even though, you know, certain things, I know certain shows use a library where they just kind of throw things in randomly, my feeling is the individual crafted piece of music for every moment, whether it's a sitcom or whether it's a drama. And I hope that I'm able to do that as long as I keep writing, because I think the individual cue, I mean, you go back to the people that started our profession, the greats like Max Steiner, Victor Young, and Eric Korngold. I mean, everything was crafted for that moment, and that's what that music is to me.
My guests today are Dan and Cheryl Folliard. Dan is a television and film composer. Cheryl is an independent music supervisor. They're both guests of the University of Tulsa's Film Studies program, visiting with students. I guess you're going to be observing a recording session today and working with students in the Film Studies program. And they're our guests today on Studio Tulsa. Dan has numerous credits. Cheryl's worked on numerous television shows over the years. Well, one of the things about being a composer for television, especially, the deadlines are, I mean, when you're working series television, it's like a new script every week. And you're, I mean, is it still, you know, they split up the seasons the way they didn't used to probably when you first started doing this. Is the deadlines any easier, or is it still like week to week to week to week?
I've been fortunate. I'm very good at time management. So I basically... you hear about these guys working all night and everything. I did at one point when I was doing Laverne and Shirley, and we had to do, you know, Laverne and Shirley doing some kind of shtick for like 3 or 4 minutes. Sometime I'd be working until 5 o'clock in the morning, and then we'd be recording at 9 that day. But I've been fortunate to manage my life, you know, different than others. I kind of get it into kind of a 9 to 5 period of time. But yeah, of course, you can't sit around and wait for that muse to hit. You know, I remember one guy, very famous songwriter, was telling, you know, I think he was telling Disney, they asked him, will you do it? And he said, well, I'll kind of dwell on this and see if the muse hits me. Well, there's no muse. You got to just get it done. And if you can't get it done, then, you know, you should probably be in a different area of music. And then
you know, in television, the turnaround is so fast. It's 3 to 5 days between the time you spot the music in the episode, which is when you sit down with the producer and the composer and the music editor and decide where in the project the music's going to be and where the score is going to be. And then you go off and you write it and you're finishing final product. I would say 3 to 5 days is typical in television.
Wow. Now, Dan, I want to ask you have a couple of theme songs, very popular theme songs to your credit. And You're probably also in television at a time when all of a sudden the studios basically said, we don't want theme songs anymore. We want to get right into the show. What was that like? I mean, it seems like television is going back away from that now because there's something to be valued, you know, especially with all the Netflix series and HBO series where the theme song really sets the mood again. What was that like when studios basically said, we don't want theme songs?
That is maybe one of the most astute questions you could ask. And I got so upset about that. There was, you know, Roseanne, Home Improvement, they were a minute 10. If you go back now, they've put my theme that I wrote with Howard Pearl into the Tom Hanks show, Bosom Buddies, because they couldn't license My Life anymore from Billy Joel. It's too expensive. That was a 2.5 minute theme song. And then all of a sudden, you hit this period, and I did this show with Tay Leone called Naked Truth, and, you know, here it was. Wow! I mean, and that was it. And I said, come on, guys. I mean, we need longer than that. I mean, people got to be in there fixing food in the kitchen. They got to be able to hear that song to bring you back in. The show's going to start. And they said, no, we got to get into the product. We got to get into the show. So that was so disappointing. But you're exactly right. With shows like the political drama. I mean,
oh, House of Cards.
Yeah.
I believe that's
Jeff Beal.
Jeff Beal.
He's got a long time to establish, and it works. I mean,
it's
you've got
moody.
This long,
you know,
minute, maybe longer. So it is coming back.
And then the important part of your craft is that minute's just not a minute. It's really, from your viewpoint, I have to set the sort of viewpoint of this series.
Here's what it is.
You know, and that music is like creep. It's got this real creepy undercurrent of you know, slimy politics.
It's talking about what's going to happen. And that's what I always said when I'd sit and talk, we'd be in a meeting, decide what we're going to do, like with Tim Allen on Home Improvement. Within that minute, fortunately, that was a minute, you basically have got to have all the elements that you would have in a 3.5 minute song. You got to have a beginning, a middle, an end, and you have to get that all condensed and make that happen in whatever time you have. And I even tried to do that with the one I just sang you. You tried to get the essence in, you know, within whatever framework. But you build the drama. You tell what that show's going to be about, and you got to do it all in the constraints of however long it is.
I want to ask you, for both of you in your business today, with scoring for television especially, is this a good time? Because, you know, you look at it, there's the three networks. There's probably 10 to 12 basic cable networks that are now producing original programming. You got the premium channels like HBO and Showtime. They're also doing original pieces. Amazon and Netflix as well with just streaming series. Is this a better time for?
I believe so. I think it is. I think there's more work and more variety of different kinds of shows. Mm-hmm.
You know,
and producers being able to do things they might have been too controlled by a network before to be able to do. They were able to break out and do more interesting original programming.
You know what? Cheryl's right. And I have to jump into the other hat that I wear. I served as president of the organization that represents film and TV composers, the Society of Composers and Lyricists, for 10 years. I've been now just reelected to the ASCAP Board of Directors. And there are two things that I got to say. One is there's never been a better time because, I mean, there are so many opportunities out there for scoring now. So, and games now have become a very, very important, an entity. So there's more opportunity now. Of course, there are a lot more people doing it, but there's more opportunity. But one of the challenges is going to make sure that we can still continue to be paid. And, you know, you saw it with the record business, you know, it's diminished dramatically because of piracy and the ease that people can get music. We're having the same issues right now of trying to get composers, songwriters paid by these new organizations such as Pandora. And so the challenge is there's more opportunity, but we got to make sure that as the mediums change and it goes from cable to the internet, that people are going to get paid. And we're working hard to try and,
you know, back in the old days, when new technology created these conditions, you had like musician strikes for a year and a half. There's a recording ban several times in the 1940s. I don't see that happening in this day. How do you make sure that musicians and composers and those people are paid for their work?
Well, you've got to educate the people that are making the decisions. We are very active at ASCAP of going to Washington. Once a year, we have a concert called We Write the Songs, and we have famous songwriters perform our material in front of Congress. In fact, I got a chance to play my Roseanne and Home Improvement theme songs recently. Unfortunately, I had to follow Ray Parker Jr. singing Ghostbusters. And I said, thanks a lot for putting me on right after Ray Parker. I mean, that guy has energy. But I tried to stand up
to
that.
You got everybody on that grunt at the end of Home Improvement.
Yeah. I got everyone on the which is the end of it.
Right.
But so at any rate, you've got to educate the people that are making the decisions. And as far as the musicians, I think that you got to find find balance between paying people what they are deserved and also making it affordable for the people that are making the product. So
yeah, well, now Dan, I should mention for the first time in a number of years, you're without a series right now. I mean, you had St. George, which was one season on, I think, FXX.
Yeah, it was.
And before that, The Secret Life of the American Teenager, Seventh Heaven, and then Home Improvement and Roseanne.
Right.
So what are you doing now? Are you looking for a new series, or are you doing a new direction in your life, or what exactly?
You know what? First of all, I got to tell you, Rich, one thing about this business is that new opportunity is right around the corner. So I may be heading back to my room right now and getting that next call. I remember I was in Washington at this concert that I was just telling you about, and I had my phone with me, and I was running up to the Lincoln Monument, and all of a sudden the phone was ringing. I looked down. It was Matt Williams. I hadn't heard from this guy in 15 years since Home Improvement. He said, I got this new series coming up. So there's always that right around the corner. But in the meantime, I'm going back to where I started after I got inspired with that James Taylor Carole King concert. I started out as a songwriter. I've been writing a lot of songs recently, and we've got some interesting things that I'm working on with a couple of really talented writers.
All right. Well, Dan, Cheryl, thanks very much for joining us today.
Great.
Thank you.
Film and television composer Dan Folliart and music supervisor Cheryl Folliart speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. The two are guests of the University of Tulsa's film studies programs. They'll be speaking to students early this week, and they'll have a public presentation this evening at 6 o'clock at the Meinig Recital Hall of the University of Tulsa's Lorton Performance Center. That's free and open to the public this evening at 6. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.